WTIC. So a little earlier, we start off the show talking about the rigged system here in the state, where there's been a merger between the representation of the people and the representation of the unions into a single character, Union Joe Arasimowitz, the speaker of the unions, I call him, because he obviously isn't representing the best interest of the state. How can you do that when you admit that that's not where you're up to? Joining us to talk about it is Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute. He's got a new story up at Yankee that's called Conflict of Interest, Union Influence in Connecticut Government. Hello there, Mark. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Todd. It's good to be on with you.
Thank you, sir. And tell us about what inspired this particular bit of work, because this looks like a big effort putting together this column.
Yeah. This is the first of a two-part series, and basically what we wanted to show, and we wanted to show the people of Connecticut that, you know, there is a strong union influence in the legislature. And, you know, the public sector unions work very hard to get their own people into office so that, you know, they can have certain protections afforded. As the state faces these budget problems, you know, public sector unions want to be sure that nothing that can, you know, kind of hinder their efforts, you know, gets passed. And so they're able to, you know, use their money, their influence, and their political bent to, you know, stack the deck and, you know, set up a situation at the Capitol where they're kind of pulling the strings. So we thought that, you know, a lot of the people of Connecticut probably didn't realize how strong the influence was up there. I mean, you hear about things, but people got their day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to put it all out there in something that was, you know, easy to read, easy to understand. You kind of follow the bouncing ball to see, you know, what's going on at the legislature.
So it's pretty vivid. You have some sound cuts posted along with the story, and I wanted to play one of them. And so people would just hear how rigged the system is against taxpayers. At least that's how the Speaker of the House, who is a full-time union employee, makes it sound.
I say at all these meetings and groups that I've talked to, I will never allow an anti-collective bargaining bill to be called to the House floor. I'm the majority leader. I can make that guarantee.
All right, he said basically before he became speaker, when he was majority leader, which is the second in command of the legislative process, he said that he would guarantee that he was there to protect union workers and their rigged relationship with the state. Explain that one to us.
Well, yeah, that was Joe Arasimowitz, and that was back in 2014. He was actually helping campaign for another union employee, Representative Russ Morin, who is now Deputy Speaker of the House. And pretty much what he said. He wasn't going to let any kind of anti...
Yeah, but put it into context. Well, what does that mean in terms of how legislation works its way through the House of Representatives?
Well, that's if the legislation even gets to the House of Representatives. I mean, one thing that we point out in the article is that anything having to do with collective bargaining or, you know, state employees and things like that has to go through the Labor Committee. And the Labor Committee, of 14 members, six of them are either current or former union employees. I mean, they've stacked the deck in the Labor Committee. So you can pretty much guarantee that if you have a bill that's going to push back on, you know, collective bargaining, or, you know, it's going to, you know, make the unions more transparent or anything like that, it's probably not even going to get through the Labor Committee, let alone get to the House floor. And the only, you know, the only major collective bargaining reform that's happened in the past, you know, 10 years or whatever, has been the fact that the union contracts are no longer deemed approved if the legislature doesn't vote on them. That wasn't passed by any bill. That was part of the 2017 budget agreement. That was a hard-fought negotiation that the Republicans, with a much larger presence in the House, were able to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, you know, other than that, no, he's pretty much kept to his word.
So the I guess the question is, what do you think can be accomplished by the understanding that you're presenting in this column?
Well, you know, the people of Connecticut, the taxpayers of Connecticut, have to recognize that, you know, one of our biggest costs are labor costs and our unfunded pension liabilities, and we can't do anything about it with the CBAC agreements that keep getting passed by, you know, Governor Malloy and the legislature and the contracts that keep getting passed. None of those things are going to be able to be fixed or reformed because of the union influence. Right now, they control the purse strings when it comes to anything dealing with retirement benefits. And those retirement benefits are what's threatening to sink Connecticut's fiscal house.
Yes. So, all right, hold on one sec, Mark. We're going to get a quick traffic and weather update, and then we'll continue the conversation with Mark Fitch. From the Yankee Institute, you can check out his conflict of interest column at YankeeInstitute.org, 860-522-9842. Talking to Mark Fitch, author of Conflict of Interest, Union Influence in Connecticut Government. Here is the Speaker of the House once again before he was Speaker.
You guys have a great union.
He's talking to, who is he talking to? Fill us in.
Oh, he's talking to, it was a little union political convention meant to raise money and get Russ Morin reelected to the House of Representatives.
It was the family getting together.
Yeah.
You guys have a great union, proud members. You've made this state what it is. Don't let it go away with one election. Please, stand together, stand as brothers and sisters, and be a family, and make sure we're looking out for our own. Thank you.
So, kind of sad that the Speaker of the House thinks his own are people who are in his union club rather than the people he represents.
Yeah, and that was kind of brought up when this video first surfaced. Is, you know, technically, you know, you're supposed to be representing the taxpayers of your district, and, you know, there is that union loyalty, and, you know, he had that on full display there. And this is kind of when people, one of the reasons we did this is when people sit there and say, why can't Connecticut cut its spending? Why can't Connecticut do this? Why is there all this talk of raising taxes? This is a big reason why. You know, public sector unions, you know, the union leaders, they don't want to see spending cuts. They want to see higher taxes, particularly on the wealthier individuals in the state. And they push those policies. I mean, the recent $15 minimum wage, that has been pushed for 4 or 5 years, primarily by these public sector union leaders. Same with the paid family medical leave. And there was a list of other bills that they've been pushing for that they didn't have time to get pushed through, and I'm sure that we'll see them again next year. But this is part of it. They have their people in positions of power that can, you know, send these bills right on through, right up to the Senate, right up to the House of Representatives. They put a lot of money behind Governor Ned Lamont's election. They put a lot of money behind a bunch of senatorial races to make sure that the Republicans didn't have that tie in the Senate anymore. And there's a reason that they do this, and it's so that they have protections afforded to them that the taxpayers don't.
And when you say there's a lot, when you say they put a lot of money into the elections, what are you talking about?
Oh, I mean, well over $1 million this past year. I mean, this past election, and those are just independent expenditures made on behalf of, you know, a candidate like, you know, Governor Lamont.
You mean, you know, to support Super PAC ads or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly. You know, uh-huh. all the ads that you see running. And one interesting thing is that, you know, when it comes to political spending, the unions don't have to report any communications that they have with their own members. So who knows how much money they actually spent, like, rallying their own people. But when it comes to, you know, the things that they do have to report, it was over $1 million. And I went through 10 years of independent expenditures looking at union spending each year. And if you go back to 2014, when Governor Malloy won his second term, you know, the unions poured about $700,000 to $800,000 into the Working Families Party, which then used the money to spend to get Governor Malloy reelected.
So is that what the Working Families Party is for? Is that just a ghost organization to transfer more money to the Democrats?
It's an interesting organization because they function as a political party. They actually have their own ballot. They have their own line on the ballot, and, you know, they endorsed Malloy back in 2014, so you saw Malloy appear under the Democrat line and then also under the Working Families Party line. But they're also an organization that, you know, does political spending, canvassing, organizing, you know, running independent expenditures. So they kind of cross a couple different lines when it comes to, you know, political operations in the state. And for many years, the unions, you know, poured a lot of money into the working families' PACs, you know, their political action committees. This past year, with the most recent election, you saw a lot more just spending by SEIU directly, mm-hmm. Or AFSCME, you know, rather than pouring it through the Working Families Party. I'm not sure why there's a difference. But
are there any other organizations in the state that spend that kind of money on elections?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are on the other side of the aisle, too. You know, I know the Connecticut Realtors Association, they spent about $600,000 to $700,000, I think, in this past election.
On the Republican side?
Probably, yeah. I believe more on the Republican side. It was reported fairly widely. And this is part of the other part of the reason we did this story is that, you know, something like that, the Connecticut Realtors, who are trying to make money, you know, by
having a vibrant economy.
Yeah, by having a vibrant economy, a place that people want to move to. You know, they want a place that they can sell. That was widely reported what they spent, but nobody was really reporting what the unions were putting in, and so that's where we kind of saw a gap that we could fill as far as educating the public.
You at Yankee Institute and this column, Conflict of Interest.
Yes, sir.
Okay, closing thought. We've got about 90 seconds left.
Yeah, I mean, go to the site, read it. Follow the bouncing ball, follow the money, and see how the deck is actually stacked against, you know, any reforms that Connecticut can make to make it a more successful state. You know, this isn't saying that, you know, unions don't serve a purpose, but it is saying that, you know, when you're the largest special interest group in the state and you're pulling the strings, you know, something's got to change. That power structure can't remain in effect and hope to change anything in Connecticut.
What is the product that taxpayers would be happy to know that is being delivered by the unions?
Never mind.
That was an unfair question. Let me play another sound cut. Joe Arasimowitz.
So one of the things I swore to myself is I wasn't going to let it happen here in Connecticut. That at least I would do as many tours of this state, including Middletown, CSEA locals, AFSCME, CEUI, anybody I could talk to ensure that that would never happen in Connecticut.
He's talking about the changes in Wisconsin that Scott Walker caused when he threw the unions out there, and now they've got the lowest unfunded liabilities in the country, of any state in the country. And the idea that a leader in Connecticut, which has near the largest unfunded liabilities in the country, the idea that a leader here would be promising to protect us from that kind of outcome is kind of bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing. And what's interesting was, you know, Governor Ned Lamont, you know, mirrored those same comments in his inaugural speech, saying that we don't need a Wisconsin moment. We need a Connecticut moment. I mean, so far, Connecticut's moment's not looking all that great. And I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, looking at how these, you know, these people in power are affecting the state, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Connecticut is not doing well, you know, compared to other states around it, compared nationally. It's not doing well. So something has to change. And right now, the existent power structure in Connecticut is not allowing that change to happen.
All right,
and
Mark
so
Fitch.
Something's going to have to be reformed.
YankeeInstitute.org. Read Conflict of Interest there. Fascinating piece. Thank you so much for your time, sir. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Todd. Anytime.
All righty.